The Producers, featuring the most respected international talent in the world of audio production and voiceover. Radio, TV, film, and online. In-depth interviews, industry insights, putting you on the inside. This is The Producers Podcast with Ryan Dreen.
All right, thanks for checking it out again. Another edition of The Producers Podcast. Today we have a real-life producer. I've been stretching the legs on this thing for a while, diving into other forms of voiceover, other types of people in the industry, but I always have, you know, my personal roots were laid down in radio imaging. I really enjoy talking to the big-time imaging producers, and that's what we have today. I'm trying to blast through some of the stuff I wanted to talk about in the intro pretty quick. It's a bit of a long episode, which is totally fine, but just be aware. I get it. If you grab it and you want to listen to 30 minutes and kind of hear the background stuff, we get super tech heavy after, I think, about 30 minutes or so, and then we go on for quite a while. If you're a voiceover talent, maybe you're thinking of doing imaging or you are voicing imaging, I have people ask me, you know, what do the producers think on this or that? You know, what do they want? What do they not want? We get into that. If you're a young producer starting out, we get into some of the stuff you want to be thinking about, the stuff you want to buy. So if you don't want to buy, you know, what do you have to spend your money on? The basics, all that kind of stuff. We get into that. It's a very tech-heavy show. I'll just make that very clear. We get all geeky and nerdy, and, you know, could I have cut it down? Probably, but I went ahead and just left it all in there and just had some fun. Just talked shop for quite a while. Terry provided a lot of content for this show. A great show notes page. I really thank him for that. He's been a friend for a long time, and he kind of knows what I like to do sometimes with the show notes pages. So a full-blown long demo with little Terry bits inside of it. I gave you that whole thing on the show notes page. And lots of pictures. He gave us pictures from the intercom studio and also from the home studio, which he is redoing, and he's built himself a brand new steampunk desk. It's really awesome. And you're going to see a lot of stuff in his pictures. You're like, what in the hell is he? Is that like a Walmart cash register? Yes, but he uses it for cool stuff. Lots of picks, and then plugin list. This will become clear later on in the episode. If that excites you, you'll understand what we're talking about, but that is provided on the show notes page as well. I honestly don't remember if I already did Terry's credits, so let me go again real fast. Terry Phillips is, email address, terry@terryphillips.com. He's very wide open to taking your questions, comments, concerns, whatever's on the email there. He is the creative director for Entercom Detroit, WOMC, Classic Hits, and one of my favorite country stations in America, WYCD. He does a lot of different things there, but he's also a sound designer. He makes the music, he does video, voiceover, and then, of course, one of the really great radio imaging producers in the U.S. of A. So let's hear some, demo audio from Terry, and then we'll get right to it. Terry Phillips.
Hi, I'm Terry.
Hi, Terry.
The Detroit Original, 104.3 WOMC.
Does he have
Detroit's greatest hits?
Strong lips.
19. I feel the need. The need. For speed.
Throwback Thursday. With Bobby and Stacey.
Want the knife?
We make.
What was that ruckus?
The ruckus. Ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
The galaxy's greatest soundtrack. The hits keep coming.
No!
And so do the tickets.
Orchestra on. Tickets now.
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 The Sight DTE Energy Music Theater. The date, Friday, June 1st, 2018. WYCD's Hoedown 2018.
Hey, Detroit.
Dirt. Now we're going to get 5150'd.
And Lee. Come throw down with us.
The castaway everyone wants to be.
Just as free.
You can't buy these tickets anywhere.
I was going to be your forever.
Become a partner in hope now. 800-374-4995. Scary superstitions in baseball. Players wear the same socks.
Now sniff.
Name their bats.
I will name him George.
And Giambi beat a slump by wearing a gold thong. Seriously, me for last.
Perfecting the art of the paper cut.
Ow. Ow.
Ow. Ow. Ow. Ow. Ow.
New, free, and beautiful.
Beautiful.
Pig winning is back Tuesday with KKRV's Grand in Your Hand contest. You, your Detroiter. From the greatest,
or greatest suburbia of,
the greatest town in America. Yeah. You grilled in the snow.
Or wanted to.
You've broken out the shorts before the snow melted. And you are so ready to leave the house. Now.
Yeah,
us too. Certified stunt gift wrappers. It ain't pretty.
You better watch out.
But it ain't pretty. Cabbage. Lettuce. Cheddar. Mac. Fins. Five spots. Fibers. Folding stuff. Greenbacks. Get the loot. The moolah. 10 spots. 2 bits. Coin. Dead presidents. Get a big wad. And a lot of wampum.
Money!
Yeah, lots of money.
All right, and we do it again. Terry Phillips is the guest. You just heard him talking and you heard him making noises there for the glorious WYCD and WOMC in beautiful Detroit, Michigan, and of course all around the world. Hey, Terry, thanks a lot for joining me.
Hey, my pleasure, man. Happy to be here.
So I was going to preface this a little bit. I think I mentioned it in my intro, but I feel weird about, you know, when I actually have, you know, a full-blown friend who also happens to be great at what they do on the show. I'm always worried people will be like, oh, well, Ryan just pals with him, you know. But I want to make it clear, if there's a producer in America that deserves to be featured, it is you. So there's my one compliment to you, okay?
Aw, the check's in the mail.
Good. So, and you know, maybe a while back you would have said, hey, when you're talking, you know, country imaging producers, you know, Terry goes to the top of the list. But I'd say, you know, you've got your hands in all kinds of formats. So, yeah, man, I consider you to be one of the best and technically savvy. You're one of my go-to calls for that as well. So I appreciate that.
I am a geek. I am definitely a geek. Not a nerd, but a geek. There's a difference.
Right. Geek is good. Nerd is okay. Nerd's okay, but geek is good. All right. So let's dive in here. We got a bit of a different setup here. We're both in our home studios, and we're constantly trading it's usually me stealing more from you, but constantly trading emails and phone calls about what can we do next? Where's the plugins we have to have? Are you in the UA ecosystem yet? You know, Universal Audio. I'm going to get into the keyboard that you brought up, so in other words, we're going to go a lot of tech in this show. It's definitely going to be a tech heavy show. But for now, let's get to your background. You've got a pretty dynamic background. You're in Detroit. You've been there a long time. But you used to be known as Texas Terry Phillips. So where'd you get started out and what brought you to Detroit?
Well, I'm from Dallas, Texas originally, which is kind of weird because you're in Dallas, Texas, but you're from California.
Right.
So it's like a prisoner swap we got going here.
Yeah.
The very long story, very short. My parents divorced when I was a little kid. My dad, who was born in Fort Worth, Texas, graduated from University of Illinois and was getting his master's in entomology. Yeah. A bug scientist. Ain't that sexy,
bugs.
Women?
Yeah, hey.
Yeah, you know, nothing turns a girl on like someone who has drawers full of beetles. So,
yeah.
and my mom, who's from the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, that's where she was born, she ran straight to Texas on divorce when I was about 3. So I was raised in Texas, elementary, junior high school, la, 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 la. But I would come up to Michigan about 3 weeks to 5 weeks a year. So it wasn't an unknown place to me. But I started working at KZPS, a classic rock station in Dallas as an intern. From there, I wouldn't give up. I kept turning a tape and resume into Y95 in Dallas. The country stations told me immediately that I was too young. So I hit on The Edge, Y95, and Eagle, which is alternative CHR at the time.
Yep.
And every day, starting in summer, I brought a new tape and resume over until Y95 finally buckled and hired me as a board op. They ran their air check system through Program 2. I figured this out. So my first day board opping, I took the mic out of air, Program 1, and ran a live airship to tape, even though on air I was doing what I was supposed to do and shoved it under the PD's desk. He called me up with a couple of motherfuckers and how the hell did I do that? And surprise, surprise, he actually let me be on the air for 2 hours on overnights at first, and that grew from there. But
and I was going to be clear, at this point, you're going for an on-air gig. You wanted to be on the radio. You weren't a producer
yet. But I was, and I wasn't at the same time. Here's where the geek gets in there. Okay. When I was a sophomore, I think it was, maybe this is a junior, in high school, a computer came out called the Amiga. Now, I'd always been a computer geek. Even when I was literally a toddler, my dad would take me into the mainframe room when I was visiting him at University of Illinois, and I would punch cards in their antique mainframe that no one used anymore and shove them in and watch the lights blink. So the Amiga came out, and I was working at a stereo/computer store, and they had a deal where you could buy it for cost, what they were selling it. So I bought this bugger for cost. I saved up all the money for, I think it was like 6-7 months. And it was the first home computer, and one of the first computers, period, that had a stereo sampler capable of 44.1 kilohertz at 16 bits.
Whoa, yeah.
This was 1986.
Yeah, yeah. I was going to say it was like the 30s because you're older than me. But yeah, no. But yeah, this is the 80s. So this is this is before any of the DAWs. I mean,
yeah, no, this is that. No, that was my freshman year. So I bought that, and I was dinking around with sound back then. So flash back forward to Y95, and I'm doing this on-air gig. I end up, I did silly voices, still occasionally do. And the morning guy brought me on his show. Jack Murphy was the guy at the time. And in concert with doing that, at the same time, my dumb butt was hanging out in Brian Wilson's room, who was the imager of Y95 at the time, amazing, brilliant, talented guy, and just sitting there like a high school girl and a crush watching a football player. I mean, I just watching everything he did, watching on the multi-tracks and the whole nine yards, and I'd hang out with Aubrey Hayden a little bit in the production room. On the other side, the commercial stuff, but I was mostly just fascinated in how he crafted the theater of the mind scripts. Y95 at the time just had these crazy, amazing promos. Now, my context is Dallas, so I think they're the best in the world, but, you know, who knows? I do know Brian is one of the most respected writers there is, has been, period. But
let me ask you about that right there. So this is still, what year are we talking about?
Oh gosh, this was, I don't know, 89, 90, yeah, so something like that.
Still, okay, but almost the 80s. But so he's cutting tape, right? I mean, you're watching him back in the days of tape cutting and cutting yourself and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
So you're actually technically more advanced than he is at home, I guess, a little.
Well, and that's the funny thing. I would somewhere lost in time, because my mom's not a saver, insert eye roll here. I made tapes when I was like 7-8 years old. I started making tapes on one of those long rectangle recorders where it had that orange button inside of the rectangular play button for record that would leave an indent in your finger when you press it down.
Yep.
I did interviews with cartoon characters, which I was doing both voices of. I do parody songs, and I would talk up records. I had no idea that me playing interviewer/DJ was actually kind of production. And I would try to replicate. Now, the memory of computers back then was so small, you could only fiddle with about 12 seconds of multi-track audio. So not a lot, but I would try to replicate.
When you say multi-track, how many tracks?
Four.
Yeah,
mono.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
And so I would try to replicate some of the stuff that Brian was doing in the digital world back then. You jump forward from there. I was doing small market stations while I was in college and Y95. After college, I ended up in El Dorado, Arkansas for quite a while. Learned so much from those folks there. Buzz Bennett taught me so much at Y95. And then Craig Dale and that group over there, they sold those stations. They are U.S. stations now in Hot Springs. And if someone's looking for a part-time gig, they're the first people to call because they like getting people on their way up. They like stewarding young talent.
I've known a number of people that did that particular group and that have now gone on to very big things, very big jobs.
They're great. They're fantastic. You want to talk about small market doing it right. So from there, I was for 5 seconds in Wichita, Kansas. Long story, won't bore you with it. And then in Tucson, Arizona, for about a little over 5 years, if I remember right. And they had a Pro Tools room. Now, this was 22, 23 years ago. It's back when Pro Tools was called Session 8.
I was going to say, yeah. Pro Tools wasn't even Pro Tools yet, yeah.
Yeah. And I cut my teeth on real multi-track back then. And back then, Session 8 was called Session 8 because it only had 8 tracks.
And was that Session 8? I can't remember. I've never seen it or one, except for maybe a picture. But was that on its own standalone piece of hardware?
The hardware resembled Pro Tools proper as you know it today.
But it was like it was like Windows 3.something or whatever, or Windows 95 probably. It looked like that.
Mean the Windows was antiquated, but the interface of Pro Tools was very similar to what you see today. The external hardware was very similar. A matter of fact, the first versions of Pro Tools used the same hardware that Session 8 did.
Yeah.
What was it, the 192 something?
Yeah. So I actually just traded emails with Jeff Berlin today, and he brought up his old 192, I think is how he referred to it.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, so you get into Pro Tools in Tucson, but what was Tucson like? You were at which station were you at there? You know, what were you doing?
I was at KIM FM, KIIM FM, Tucson, Arizona.
Yep. Famous calls. Yep.
Yep. I was hired, and through the brilliant people over at Rusty Walker, somehow thought I was worth a shit, and hired me. And I had the time of my life out there, and learned. I've been really blessed at the places I've worked. Learned so much there in many different ways, and had the best equipment. It was just amazing. And
what company was it at the time?
The Jim Sloan.
Okay.
He was inducted recently in the Country Radio Hall of Fame, actually.
Yeah.
A really smart guy, great broadcaster, very religious, and you couldn't have any swear words on the air. He wouldn't play Garth's Rodeo because damned old rodeo. Uh-huh. And Garth actually called him personally on it. That was kind of funny. But he basically said, well, if you used it in a biblical sense, I would accept it. But nope. Okay.
Like biblical sense? Oh, like you've
like
been damned
to hell. Yeah.
Not GD. I mean.
No. Well, yeah, that's definitely not the biblical sense.
Yeah, that would be the opposite, I think. Yeah. Okay. So that group there, though, in Tucson, when you were there, how many stations were in your group?
They had just added their third okay. K-Hits.
And I think
under Cumuladel, the K-Hits still exists. I don't think it's the same format. It was... Classic Hits in the early days of Classic Hits.
At the time, I mean, it's not that I was joking about you being that much older. You started young, but I mean, at the time, radio was completely different. What was it like to work in that market in a group of three stations? You know, how many companies were you competing against? Probably more than two, like it is today.
Oh, yeah. No, but not much more. We had Journal, who owned the AC. And a couple other stations. I forget the name of the company that owns the rock stations there. They still own them. And then Clear Channel at the time. It's now iHeart, obviously. The brilliance of Jim Sloan was he was an old DJ who bought an FM station before FM stations were big. And he bought out his investors immediately. And he bought out all of the remaining radio towers on the mountain. So if you wanted a signal with full coverage in Tucson, Arizona, you had to pay Jim Sloan, and he had no debt. So Clear Channel, for half their stations, paid Jim Sloan to compete with him.
Yeah, that's classic.
And as well as the rock station, I believe, was on those towers. He gave, if I remember correctly, free tower space to the fire and police department. One of the TV stations was up there and some cell people. And when he sold the whole thing to Cumulidel, he did not sell the towers. And he cashed out for, I think it was like $361 million. Smart guy. Never had any debt. It's like, wow. Can I be like you when I grow up?
Man, yeah. I got to keep us on track because we could actually talk like these old radio stories.
Yeah.
But
I got into the imaging heavily because I started doing commercials. I got little recognition with an award from the local ad club. I ended up doing all the imaging at Kim FM. They put me on the morning show. And even though that went, you know, well, the PD found me more valuable in the production room doing the imaging, and he started decreasing my role on air. And at the pay I was getting at the time, I was like, well, if I'm going to do this, I can get paid more. So I went to FBE in Flint, which is a sign-on, and I was temporarily manning the controls of the ship while they got a PD. They had a PD set the plan. I was the production director, image director, and middays for sign-on. With the promise that once it got big enough of a boy, I could concentrate on production. They kept good on their promise. Driving through town, a couple years later, the PD of YCD was driving through town. Her production person was, quote-unquote, retiring, so he could focus on voiceover. And called up my PD and said, who the hell's doing your imagery? Have him send me a CD. And he ran in the room and said, put your stuff together and put it in overnight to YCD in Detroit now.
Who's the PD at that time?
Lisa Rodman.
Okay.
She hired me and Chuck Edwards and one of my favorite people, the brilliant Ron Chapman. Literally, I sent that overnight on a Monday. I got a call for an interview Wednesday morning for Friday. I did the interview Friday afternoon. Driving home, I got a call with a job offer, and the next day I got married. So it's really easy to remember my anniversary date because hire date, not my start date, but my hire date and my wedding are literally a day apart.
Oh man, that's classic. So, how long does it till you get started at YCD? Did you have to give Flint some notice or did you just say, throw the deuces up and run out of town?
Well, I gave him 2 weeks notice. That's the right thing to do. I actually offered 4 weeks notice and Zobardine Fly, who was a general manager at the time, she's with Town Square now and has run up that ladder quite a bit. She's done well. She looked at me and shook her head and said some not safe for work words, which I've already dropped the F-banger, but I respect her too much to quote what she said. She let me know that Cumulus, I think. It was either Cumulus or Citadel. I just say Cumulidel because I get confused in the past. Had just purchased the group. And she was going to announce it today, but she didn't want to announce it on the same day that it was being announced I was leaving because she didn't want to send an abandoned ship thing to the staff.
Right,
actually put off announcing the purchase, which I thought was either incredibly paranoid or incredibly flattering.
Just take it as flattering, I would say.
I went with Paranoid because that's how I roll.
I was going to say, I know you. So, yeah, of course you went Paranoid. All right. So let's jump into Detroit then. So that's an exciting deal. I had a similar move in my life, which is it's just an exciting experience.
Yeah.
And it was even more exciting, though, back in that day because I know, you know, while I don't know your salary, I guarantee it was more than later in time. We'll just say imaging producers were making a lot more back then. But
I wasn't, but most were.
Well,
I discovered when years later I went through my first contract negotiation that I was one of the lowest paid guys in town. It's like, wait a second. Hey,
wait a minute. So now you're in Detroit. Now you've been there for 18 years. Is that true?
Yeah, 18 and a half.
18 and a half years. So
yeah.
I've said this before, and it's becoming rarer and rarer, if that's a word. I said it twice. you are not seeing 18-year veterans at a station. And I've talked to your boss multiple times. I'd say I kind of know Tim. It doesn't seem like he's about to boot you out the door anytime soon. Seems like he might want to keep you around, too.
I hope not. I mean, the human condition, you can whine and bitch about anything. And I honestly believe that people will complain roughly the same amount no matter what circumstance they're in.
If you're a complainer, you're going to complain.
Yeah, we all hit highs and lows. And you know, I've had my lows. God knows I've had my lows. But my general manager... Deb Kenyon is one of the most amazing women as far as a leader, a businesswoman, and so honorable. Tim is great. The kind of boss that you can walk in, you know, and respectfully, but shut the door and go, I think this is stupid as fucking shit. And he'll listen to you, even though you may be calling his baby ugly. And not lose his mind on you. And you know what? Even... in those cases, those rarefied cases where I'm saying the baby's ugly, sometimes he completely changes what he's going to do based on, you know, my input.
You know, I didn't get this out there up front. I said it in the intro, but, you know, your official title, are you labeled as Creative Services Director, Imaging Director, but also APD, right?
You know, I'm kind of a man without an official title at the moment.
Okay.
You know, I'm a lot of things. Okay. I do
well,
the role.
Forget official
mostly.
Title. Yeah. Yeah. What is it you say you do there?
I do the role of a creative services director. I oversee production for my stations, commercial, so on. They just tell me the prize and I write and produce whatever. There's no approval process. I've been there long enough that they trust me. And even though I've been there long enough, dang, I mean, y'all know that having no approval process at all is a lot of trust. And
Rare.
I'm honored by that. I try to keep my perspective, you know, that's a cool thing and not common.
Well, I was going to bring that up. I'm curious. We'll get a little more into the creative side, the writing, the workflow and all that. But when is the last time you put something on the air that you were told, okay, no, let's pull that back off and readjust?
That's only happened one time.
Okay. What was that all about?
Two, technically. The first one was the Illich family owns... the Tigers, they own the Red Wings. They also own Little Caesars, thus the new Little Caesars Arena. Very smart business folks, but also very protective of their brands. Well, we had a winning weekend that we were giving away Red Wings tickets, and the sponsor was Wendy's. And someone in the Illich group hit the roof, and I had to drive in and change that. That's one of them. That's where I said technically two. The other one was a thing where I was...
I want to double check that. So you had a Red Wings giveaway and it was sponsored by Wendy's, and because Wendy's competes...
with Little Caesars.
They were able to say, take that sponsor off?
Yeah. Well, and it was the most indirect sponsor possible. You know, blah, 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 sure. Red Wings, blah, 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 Red Wings, blah, 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 Red like, Wings. Another winning weekend brought, thanks to Wendy's.
Yeah, thanks to like a by the way Wendy's at the end, sure.
Right. It wasn't Wendy's is giving you Red Wings right. tickets.
Yeah, yeah.
No. So, it was just, okay. You know, hey, and Wendy's. And you know what? Hey, it's their team, man. If that's what they want to do, that's what they you know what? They can do that, and that's okay. So you know, lesson learned.
Well, I was gonna say lesson learned also if you think Don't ever put something on the air. Not that this is what you did, but thinking, oh, they won't hear it. I've heard that uttered in my life so many times, I can't believe it. And the, you know, they might hear it. Just next time you put something on the air and you say, oh, they won't hear it. Eh, they might hear it. That's all.
Oh yeah.
Okay. And did you have another one about you did a bad and somebody had to pull your stuff off the air?
Well, it was a difference in opinion. I was riffing off of, this was, I don't know, maybe a decade ago. And it was, I was riffing off short codes for texts, you know,
Like BRB and that kind of stuff?
Yeah, BRB, LOL. You know, pretty much the standard stuff. Nothing uber geeky. But, it, you know, the short codes were starting to become a really, really, really known big thing. And I was basically making fun of both sides of it, trying to do the young and the old together. Because it's a country station. You have both listening. And I positioned it in a way so the young people could laugh that the old people didn't know what they're talking about. And the old people could laugh that the young people couldn't write an entire word. There was some disagreement whether the audience would get it or not. You know, I made an adjustment midstream on the promo for the weekend.
But really not a big deal. Like, you know, you're not losing the license to the station with your error.
No.
Or not error, but
no.
Yeah.
No. Actually, there's a third now that I think of it. You remember we had a very infamous mayor here. We based a whole contest on Kwame Kilpatrick. It was, you know, basically, you know, live like Kwame. Everything, every sweeper, everything was making fun of Kwame at the time. The song by Jared, what was it called? I Pray for You, was just climbing up the charts, and we actually got him to re-sing the song about Kwame Kilpatrick. So we had the actual artist while the song's climbing up the charts sing the parody song himself.
And oh wow.
Every sweeper, every top of the hour, every contest promo was making fun of Kwame. Everything, full bore. After that aired for about 5 days, the song had been airing for a couple of weeks. He didn't catch that. You know, maybe he's not a country fan, shocker. But they caught the promos and the sweepers. And they called...
Or someone did.
Mm-hmm. And they called up and said, you know that thing you do called the downtown hoedown that happens to be downtown any city park using our police department for security? Yeah, you want that to keep happening? You need to stop right now. So we had to turn that whole contest to Live Like Big and Rich.
So, oh, well, that's an easy... Apples and oranges. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, well, you know.
Easy swap.
I had a lot of outtakes of them being silly, so I was able to pull it off. But okay, so three. That's it in 18 and a half years.
We've been talking YCD quite a bit. I mean, I hope most people listening are familiar with it because it is, I mean, truly a pretty legendary country station and unique, a unique country station in that. You know what? Why don't you tell us, what are some of the things that make YCD unique in the country landscape?
Well, okay. You're asking imaging wise, so I'll talk on that. Yeah. But my first answer would generally be, you know, Chuck Edwards, Tim Roberts, blah, blah, blah. We have an incredible pool of talent. We just do. And any success that we've had. I'm a cog in the machine. But the first thing is we don't use any services. You know, that'd be actually number 1 through 10. All sound design I create.
Describe service for anybody who didn't get that, but okay, yep.
Yeah, and nothing against the Benstown, the Short Bus, the Chase Cuts Country, and all of those. Some of those have, and the service that you've had for quite a while there. A lot of those have had some damn fine work. Some of those have had some work that I've been critical of when I've been asked my opinion too, but out of necessity, because I didn't have any money, learned how to do this, and the amount of money that it ends up being in trade. And once I had money that I could use, YCD's ratings were high enough that it basically, of sold inventory, not some magical bull crap number, of sold inventory, mm-hmm. in a year, it would cost us $80,000 to $120,000 a year for one of these services. Now, mm-hmm. they don't get that cash. They resell the inventory and they get a smaller chunk of that, and actually get a chunk of a chunk because, yeah. you know. But
believe me, we're working for a syndication company, Terry. I can tell you that, we don't get all that. But you have a good point, though.
Yeah, you know, if it's worth a dollar, you probably get a quarter. But, you know, it's still nothing to seize at. But $80,000 to $120,000 of lost revenue that we actually would sell. And I can make the sounds myself, so I just do. So YCD and OMC and WWJ, the work I do for them, none of that uses any libraries. There are a couple of foundational stuff that I've gotten a couple of buyout libraries, and I'm not afraid to say that because, you know, these people do good work. You know, shout out to Alien Imaging. Mm-hmm. You know, yep. nothing but respect for that man. I have a library from him.
All of the libraries from him. He's awesome. Jeff Schmidt, everybody.
Yes, Jeff Schmidt. Look it up. Good stuff.
I'm glad you went here. I was actually, the imaging is absolutely unique. The feel of the station. Any way that as a person who gets hired by someone that you can bring extra value. For example, Terry saved them potentially $100,000 a year in lost revenue because of a barter they didn't have to run, clearly makes you more valuable. That's just for YCD, and it makes you more valuable. But put all that aside, because that's great, but we also want to be, triple, quadruple threats as just talents. You know, we do production, we do voice work, we do this, we do that, you do sound design. So how did you get started in the world of sound design? How'd you get better at it? What are the tools you use?
First it goes all the way back to that Amiga. When you only have 12 seconds and multi-track to dink with, you're not doing long form things. You can't even do a full sweeper back then. Things were much longer form than they are now. But even that, you got to remember, you're talking 12 seconds of total audio. So I had to be very compact. So I ended up, doing station name and noise. So there's that. And I learned how to dink with square waves and different oscillators and stuff like that. FM synthesis. As things went, like a lot of people, I would pull demos from different things and listen. And literally I would pull and slice apart noises from those libraries and try to figure out how they did that. How did they do that, boosh or drop or flyby or whatever? And the first modern's the wrong word because I'm talking old, but after working at Kim FM in Tucson at FBE, we had one of the first Odysseys before they even had manuals. And they asked me for my feedback on that, which I try to be very positive. But if someone asks over and over my real opinion, I give them my real opinion. Without a mouse, and this is an ISA bus, and ISA buses are dead, that's motherboard geeky talk. You know,
and this is the Orban Odyssey you're talking about,
right? And
it has a spin wheel. I think it's kind of the
Yeah. It was designed thinking of the world of tape. And yeah. I got really fast with the bugger, and I was laughing my butt off. I think it was on your podcast when Mr. K-Rock, man himself, said, you know, he, you know, was in love with the Orban Odyssey because he's so quick with it. Great compressor, great reverb, great echo, but it was limiting to me because I had already messed with the world of Pro Tools and the mouse. So I got a copy of Cool Edit Pro and somehow talked them into paying for it. This is in 1.2A days. And so I started messing with that and speeding up and slowing down things and using their internal effects, which were rudimentary, but were good for Flint. And I would just use a compressor off the Orban and the reverb off the Orban and just record it into Cool Edit Pro. And when I went to YCD, they had a DSE 7000, which is the predecessor to the Orban Odyssey, and one of the channels was broken. And I immediately told them that in the interview, it's like, I can't do what I'm doing on that, just so you know. I was supposed to get this big budget, and long story short, I didn't get it. And I made a bet with one of the corporate engineers that if they gave me a computer, $1,000 and Cool Edit, that I could do better than the Orban Odyssey because that's what they wanted to buy. I won that bet. this was in the year 2000. So I had Cool Edit all the way to 3. Most of the studios in Intercom Detroit are still on Cool Edit 3, even though because of new computers, they've bought a license for a more recent Cool Edit. They installed 3 on it because a lot of the changes in the newer version.
Do you mean Audition?
Audition, I'm sorry, yeah.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
Because a lot of the changes in especially 6.5 and CC, just not thrilled with. And now I'm in Pro Tools land again because of that same reason.
I want to make sure we spend a little time talking about OMC because it is, if anybody's not aware, it's a classic hit station. Classic hits, right? Not classic rock. It's classic hits.
Yes. The difference is we play a more OMD than we play of Blue Oyster Cult.
okay, good. That's the difference. But seriously, it's a very successful classic hit station. And I know in the market there, the numbers are very good. You guys do well. Tell me a little bit about that. You know, what's good about it? Why does that work there? Classic hits work some places, other places they just don't.
Well, in all fairness and in complete modesty, the numbers are good, but we're still tweaking the knobs to get everything where we want it. You know, we want the bigger magic 2554 female numbers.
Sure.
We want that better, larger. Honestly, if you do classic hits or classic rock or any format for your market, it's kind of a no lose. Everyone wants to feel young, and if you focus your station on your audience and making them feel good, you've got the home run.
Let me ask you this way. The difference between the way you approach YCD and OMC is?
YCD is Hair on Fire, yeehaw. We're going to paper the town in concert tickets. Damn it, let's go, baby. Where OMC is tongue-in-cheek, lean-back, sarcasm, try to be inclusive with, hey, this stuff ain't that old, and it's pretty damn cool, ain't it, to include, the younger end. OMC, I'm working on a a thing with sales. I had a meeting with the sales manager today, coming up with ideas for mapping out the next three quarters, and mainly the next two, for sales and ideas and all that they can sell. And one of them, our afternoon guy, Bo Daniels, they had free grills to give away. How do we do this and not sound lame? It's, well, let's do Botopia and get trade with, call this or this or this company. You can get a bounce house on, you know, mention. Detroit Popcorn also has margarita machines. We have a good relationship with them. Get a popcorn machine, a margarita machine on trade. Get a bounce house on trade. You know, we'll call it Botopia. Party like your parents ain't home. It kind of sarcastic, because we're talking to the parents now.
Exactly.
So,
yeah.
You know, you rewind to the idea of them thinking, hey, they're going to have fun like their parents are out of town. It's like, they are the parents. But that's also something relatable to a 25-year-old who doesn't have kids yet. That's still a throwback to them. So trying to find a way to find that throwback that, you know, pings something on both ends.
You know, a lot of stations, programmers or, you know, managers, they'll have, you know, when you talk about the target demographic of a station, they'll often break it down to a single person. Like, we're talking to this female who is 29. She lives here. She does this. She has this much money. She does that. Can you, I don't know if you guys do that, but describe the differences in your two sort of target listeners for each of those stations.
Well, country is more of a lifestyle brand. So to me, at least, you zone in on your life group, because not in every family, but you know, there are families out there, and I know them, who, you know, once they're adults, you know, dad and son, you know, have plenty of beers together, and you know, whether they're going hunting or whether they're watching, you know, their team play football or what have you, you know, they'll have a couple of beers and throw it down. It's a lifestyle thing. You just have to not sound too hip for the old end, and you're fine. If you focus on lifestyle, you're good to me in country. That's the thing. Knowing your home. In classic hits, it's more of a person you're thinking of. And you know, in an ideal world, you're looking at a 40 to 42 year old, you know, feeling or acting a woman, someone who has kids and doesn't want to be as old as they are, and that kind of qualifies to a lot of age groups. But to extract that further, where I was going to squirrel, there's a cool piece of research that was done by Sony a long time ago. And it was for the launch of the PlayStation 2. That's how old it is. But in the research, they asked a wide swath of demographics, male and female. One very interesting question that they got very interesting feedback on, and it is, if you could be any age, how old would you be? Here's the funny thing. From 12 years old to 54 years old, all the women said 19. All the men said 21. So to me, I always remember that research, and it was a very big sample pool, and it was, you know, across multiple cities, including Detroit, actually. But I remember that because, yeah, maybe I'm talking to a 40-year-old or 38-year-old or 36 or 25 or 58. But everyone wants to feel that 19 to 21. That's what they want to feel. So talk to them in a reference of, okay, you have kids, but make them feel like they're 21. That's OMC to me.
Would you say there's this idea that I've heard thrown around over the years of, since I'm, you know, I'm old now too, I've been around a bit, that whole respecting the music type of attitude. So maybe in a CHR station, you're not too worried about what you talk up. You might chop intros off songs to get things moving along. But is there still a mentality of sort of respecting the music in classic hits? Or if you're branding it towards somebody that's younger, are you able to, You know what I'm getting at here? Can you sort of chop stuff up and abuse the music a little bit?
Well, I think because of not only what radio has presented for decades and decades and decades, but also because of what the different streaming services do, that the idea of respect the music has morphed at the least, died at the worst. Because, I mean, you got to remember, well, here's a perfect example, okay? Someone who is, let's say, 48 years old, okay? Someone who's 48 years old today most likely was born in 1970 to, 69, 70? They graduated in 1987 or 88. I'm not good with the math, so I'm trying to do it in my head. I'm not that bad, but... And so their reference, most people really solidify their music tastes, you know, around, you know, 13, 14, 15 years old. So when they were solidifying their music, you know, it was mid-80s. In mid-80s, that's when every pop station in the country, not every, but a lot, were speeding up the music by 2 to 3%. That's when they started doing that shit. So as far as respect the music, you know, boom, no. But the point mainly being is that we treat the music, I do, and you know, the jocks do, in reference to the era and the way the listeners were presented with them. But I also treat it like this is their memory, man. So, you know, I don't destroy things. I play with them.
Yeah. Artist audio and listener audio. Let's start with gathering. You have the luxury of being in a great market like Detroit. You know, some of these top 10, top 20 markets get a lot more access. How do you approach, you know, when you have an artist available to you, how do you get the best audio from them?
I wish I could do what I used to do, which was I'd bring them in my studio and we'd have a couple of shots of tequila and then I'd have them read the liners. Nobody stops me from doing that now officially. You know, so it's not like they've gotten all fuddy-duddy on me. I just haven't brought a bottle of tequila in the new building. I don't know if Deb would get mad if I did. She won't listen to the podcast, I'm sure.
Hi, Deb.
But I haven't. Wait.
What's her name again? Deb
Kenyon. Deb Kenyon. Deb, as in Deborah.
Yeah.
God, she's so great.
Hi, Deb. I just want to say hi, Deb, because I know she's listening.
You know, I have a set of trick things that I have that I try to get them to do, and some of them do and some of them don't. And a lot of people do some of them. You know, you try to get them to sing the call letters if they will. Why not? Sing them to the tune of either your jingle or their latest song. I don't care which. Just sing it, baby, if they will.
Yep.
You know, get them to say the kind of things that other radio stations don't do. I hate the, this is insert artist here. Thanks for coming to my show that you play when people are driving home from the concert, because you've just wasted a liner on a very small amount of people that you can use one time every time they're in town for a concert. When you could use that liner for something that would be usable over and over and over and over and over and over again.
What are some examples that you'll throw in front of artists? Okay, well, actually, no, I want to even go back. I know with listeners, we like to do it this way, where you'll sort of, you know, give them, you'll speak the words you want, the phrases, and then let them sort of, you know, pair it back. But with artists, I don't know if you can do that. And then what are some of the things that you like to have them say that aren't just your generic, samey liners?
Well, you know, we'd all like to think we have our secrets that nobody knows, but you listen to my damn station long enough and you'll hear them. So I'll just say it. I have them say the phone number of the radio station and call now to win.
Oh, cool.
Because a perfect example is, what's more valuable, having the artist say, thanks for coming to the show on the way home from a concert, or when you're giving away the tickets, call now and win, 313-298-1999. That's our request line. You know, instantly it sounds like the not only is the artist endorsing your station, it sounds like the artist is personally giving away the tickets on your station.
They work there, like they're part of the family, like they're
right.
Yeah.
So,
right.
You know, things like that are what I look for to try to get them in a place where them saying it has a value.
You know, the one you said, thanks for, I've never even thought to have an artist say that.
I couldn't believe
that's a good idea.
I won't say the person's name because I respect them as a programmer. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
But I had a very, very big programmer who was one of the lead guys in the company, not one I worked for. It was at CBS.
That's okay. I get you. Yeah.
But he said that was his secret weapon, that was the ultimate greatest thing to have an artist say. And
It's making me think of, it's a different way to look at it. It's in this similar vein, though. It's most important to tell people what you're going to do the thing, and then tell them what you did. You know, it's more important to tell the entire audience what you're going to do and what you did. Doing the thing, okay, fine. That's important and all, but not nearly as important. Okay. So it's in that vein, I guess, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I respectfully disagreed, but I mean, he's a great person. So I don't want to out him on something
it doesn't matter. I've had plenty of terrible ideas. I'm sure you've had at least one bad idea. So,
God, I can't count that high.
Okay. So, artist audio, I don't want to. I want to move on to other stuff too. I'm torn, rock and a hard place. But any other tricks to how you deal with the artist, just to get that real good, like that content that makes it sound like they actually are part of the station?
Well, I shoot the shit with them for a while before and try to create a rapport. Almost like it's an interview. Get them comfortable in the room. Get them to forget about the microphone. Artists are not DJs. They're not used to talking, and they certainly aren't used to reading from a sheet.
Right.
If they're struggling with something, I'll tell them to move on or I'll say, oh, you're thinking about it too hard. Dude, just throw back. Use whatever words you want. Go for it. And, sometimes magic happens because you're just saying, say whatever you want. Well, I'm going to say Chuck is a big blah, 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 blah. Ding. I'm going to keep that one.
I'm sure you do this and you would probably say it. I might even be cutting you off. But for anybody that has an artist walk into your studio, start rolling before they've walked in the studio. And that way, because you never know what conversation's going to happen while they're just sitting there not thinking you've started yet. And they're not going to be upset that if you end up grabbing something that sounds awesome and you use it in some way. Plus, they're just never going to know.
But as long as you're respectful to, knowing that they're a country artist, you don't want to have them saying the F banger and you bleep out just barely enough to be legal, because then, you just defamed their image. There's some limits, but I have some of the craziest things from some artists by just rolling. I have Taylor Swift saying some stuff that nobody has, because when she first made the rounds and sang off the trunk of Tim Roberts' car, he was off to a meeting. I dragged her up into the studio and had that 15-year-old read a whole bunch of stuff. And she was just giggling all the way through it and having fun. And I have used her laugh when she was doing country in so many damn things. I got all sorts of crap out of that. I have Big and Rich saying the dumbest things, and it's brilliant. I love it.
Here's another one, posit your opinion. When I first got to Dallas, I was sort of, you know, I'd let other people decide, you know, okay, well, this is, this artist will come in and talk to you. But after the first couple artists that I knew had come in and I didn't get liners from because they were nobodies yet, and then suddenly they're on their third number one hit.
Yeah.
So I started doing liners with every single person that ever came to the building. And some people didn't really agree with that. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I you know, I used to do that, and I wish that I still did. Tim trying to Tim's great in a lot of ways, and some of those great ways are also frustrating. And this is one of them. You know, he's like, well, you're so busy, you don't need to be bothered with this. It's like, no, I want to be bothered with this. Well, this right. this person, da 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 da. You know, and sometimes he'll have them record the liners with the jock, and the jock will, trying to be nice, oh, well, just skip those. No, don't skip those. I need those. And they sometimes only worry about their liners and a couple of generics. It's like, yeah, I need them to say this and this and this too, dude. There are other shows. not anyone trying to be a butt, but they feel the pressure. They've been talking to him for a long time. They feel like they need to let him go. And it's like, no. Yeah, let him go. Let him come in my room and I'll have him say everything.
Yeah.
So it's best intentions.
Once you get someone in your room, have you ever had them say, okay, that's enough, I'm leaving?
Oh, no. No.
No.
Without fail, the record rep comes in, and I've had a couple that we were having so much fun that the record rep sticks his head in and goes, are y'all still doing liners? And the artist's like, yeah, no, we're just having fun here. Leave us alone. Go away.
Yeah.
you know, and there's been a couple where, you know, they just, again, they're singers. That's what they do. They're not, you know, announcers or actors or, you know, used to being, especially when they're baby acts, thrown in a studio and used to reading off a sheet and trying to sound natural, or riffing off of people they don't know because they've been to their, you know, 30-second radio station in, you know, 15 days. And they don't remember their own name at this point, barely. So, you know, there's some that it's just, you know, it's flat. It's just flat. And that happens. And don't blame yourself if it is when you got an artist in. Try to set a rapport, roll on everything. Give them something funny to say, making fun of someone. That usually loosens them up. And, you know, just do your best and roll with it.
What about real quick, because I want to just end here on a lot of tech talk. Actually, I have one other thing. Anyway, listeners, everybody's got some tricks and tips, but where do you gather it? Do you physically go out and gather it? And if so, where? And then how do you get the good stuff?
Whenever I can, I don't get to go to concerts very often. I don't get the tickets. I don't know why. I just don't get the ticket. I don't get tickets. But my favorite place to get listener audio is in the smoking section of a concert. Okay. You know, wait till the band has played a couple of songs. Most bands will play a couple of hits out of the gate and then roll some new music or something obscure. You know, whether the country, classic hits, whatever. You know, whether you're talking about Dierks Bentley or whether you're talking about REO Speedwagon. You know, they're going to play some hits. You're glad you're here, and then they're going to throw some obscure stuff or some new music or whatever, and mix that with hits. At some point, about four songs at least in, people will go for a smoke. And out there, you do not have the echo of the room. You do not have a big crowd walla. You do not have the loud music, but you have people partially liquored up and ready to have fun. And man, you want to get people to scream stupid shit? That is the best place on the planet to do it.
When we are talking about, let's go to the workflow, voiceover. I think I mentioned it originally, you do plenty of voiceover yourself, but you also deal with voiceover talent.
Yeah.
I've seen a lot of chatter. I don't know why. Maybe I don't pay attention to social media enough. It's because it's usually annoying, but I've seen a couple of forums or chatter, whatever, threads get started. You know, what can I get from my voice guy, and voice people wondering, You know, what are the expectations of imaging producers? So on that end, what are some reasonable expectations?
Well, the answer to that depends upon the audience you're talking to. A lot of producers would like to someday be the big voice, the voiceover person. And a lot of imagers are wondering that, how much they can use an abusive voice guy. Save your shit and reuse your scripts where you can. If you have your third contest or second contest with an artist, don't make the damn voice guy say the name of the venue twice. Save that line, that space of paper, for them saying something different. It's better for you as a producer, and it's better for them because they don't have to read as much stuff. And there's a magic little thing if you can get the voice guy to enjoy reading your scripts. They're going to look forward to it. They're going to have more fun with it. We're big on doing updates. So every concert is, this date, March 20th, and then Wednesday, tomorrow, today, or what have you. And I get the voice guys, unless I'm doing a very different context, to say those things enough that I rarely, like, in the contest, OMC, we just changed our voice guy a year ago. We're using David Kay now. Love him. Great guy. Great talent. And I don't have him say the phone number or be caller blah anymore because I have him saying it enough. There's no reason to have him say it. I put in parentheses, call now. So he knows what's going on there. But I don't have him say that anymore. Why? I do make them say the call letters a lot because you can never have too many versions. But if you smartly reuse things, that allows you to abuse them on other things. As a voice talent starting out, man, you got to do whatever you can do to get the business. Whether it's an unlimited deal or what, there is a point where the grief isn't worth the green, but you got to understand that. Sometimes you just have to suck it up because that's the only way to get the clients to get more clients.
Hey, let me move us to some tech before we round it out here. I hope this won't be too long for people, but I think we had a lot of cool stuff to get into. But I mean, you're one of my, I had a couple conversations with Berlin today and, Steve Sykes is a guy I like to go to on occasion when I need to.
Oh, hang on. I got to pick up that name you dropped there.
Oh, yeah. Get those for me. Yeah. My point is, Terry Phillips is also a name I will drop of a guy who I off email or call or text, et cetera. Like, hey, what do you think of this? I'm looking to get into that. I just broke this. Fix my that. So let me try these first two questions. As far as hardware, what are mandatory tools that every imaging producer should have?
Obviously that's a sliding scale because budget and money. you got to put that little asterisk in there because, man, I worked in the smalls too, and it's tough.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying.
Even in the big stations.
The basics. Yeah.
First of all, you need a good DAW. It doesn't have to be Pro Tools. I'm a fan. I was the biggest Adobe fan on the planet, and I still have a warm spot in my heart for them. They've made some changes. I'm just not. Audition it lost a little bit of that love and feeling for me. But if neither of those are in your wheelhouse, because those are monthly payments, or your company doesn't want to have a monthly payment, look at something like Reaper. A lot of the original programmers who made Audition what it is made Reaper, and it's amazing. Mm-hmm. And you can get a non-commercial license for it for a freelancer for, I think it's $40. And the full boat for a company to buy it is a little over $200. Very affordable, very powerful.
$200 for Reaper is a good price, but yeah, any individual can just buy their own license for, yeah. For,
yeah,
it's like, real quick, get into Reaper for people. The power of Reaper in some ways is more than Pro Tools in that I know one big advantage, it uses VSTs natively. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. That's one of the weird things as far as plugins are concerned. And for those who don't know the world of AAX, VST, ASIO, et cetera, ad nauseum.
Yeah.
VST and AAX are two plugin formats, and it has to do with Pro Tools is AAX only. That's Avid's thing. They've got good code. It works well. VST is what the rest of the world runs on.
Yeah, and they can lock down the AAX nicely as well.
Yeah.
VSTs are often free. There's millions of them.
Yeah.
And they often do things that are very niche-y, but you know, you can't find the same effect in an AAX, or at least not one you can't pay zero or $10 for.
Yeah. Now there's limitations to what you can get free for VST. You don't want to paint too rosy of a picture because, I mean, universally, to some extent, you get what you pay for. And sometimes to a fault, man. I've seen the fun that, you know, some people have with Serato Pitch and Time. But I'll tell you what, I can't afford an $800 Time and Pitch plugin. As much as I want the damn thing, I can't afford it.
I don't think it's valuable enough for that for me.
Not for $800.
I don't. Nah, it's just not good enough for that price. I don't care.
If they drop the price down, I mean, if you wait for a good sale, you can get the entire Sound Toys, everything they make for $800.
So, yeah,
you know, the Christmas sales that they have and some other sales, occasionally they'll drop it in that range for everything. And oh my God, Echo Boy, Jesus, for that alone.
I was going to put an asterisk on VSTs. I actually don't use them. So I should say that I'm a big proponent, because I feel like for the people that are starting out or that just want to get their hands on a lot of tools, it's a good place to do it. I always find just little glitchy problems with them.
Yeah.
So I don't even open them anymore. But yeah. I just, you know, it's something about Reaper is all. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's kind of the thing. As far as Reaper is concerned, having the VSTs is good. There's a lot of from Plugin Alliance to Plugin Boutique, two different websites, yes.com. They have sales and low-cost plugins that you can get there. Watch the sales. Dude, anybody who's trying to get plugins for themselves or for their company, subscribe to the newsletter of these things. Oh, my Lord. The amount you can get a discount on a Waves bundle if you're paying attention is insane.
I'm trying to pull mine up here. I owned about 10 Waves plugins myself. And then, of course, through my day job at TM, I had the Platinum bundle.
Yeah.
But I'm trying to pull up my order. They just had one of their big sales. I got the Diamond bundle for maybe $200 with a coupon.
Yeah.
I mean,
I fell in love with the UAD world, Universal Audio, and their Apollos and everything else. And before that, when they had the UAD One card in 2000, that's what I spent part of that $1,000 in the bet on, is buying a UAD One card, and fell in love with their stuff. And I'm a big fan of that. It's not cheap, but what you get is among the best in the business, hands down. Now, because of that, I was later on picked up some Waves things. But nickel and diming here and there and waiting for sales and you know, falling to the whim of, ooh, that sounds nice. It's how much? They'll have flash sales for $29 for single plugins. $29.
Right.
VST or AAX compatible. And you get both versions at once. So you can,
okay.
And I did personally, I bought the gold version for cheap, and then I added a couple effects and added a couple effects and added a couple effects. And because I had enough things, I could move to, platinum for like $110, and slowly adding some more things, I moved to diamond for, you know, I think it was like $152 when I got Diamond, because I had bought enough little things. If you do that, I mean, that's your way to get nickel and diamond up there. You don't have to drop, retail, which is like almost $8,000.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, we're talking thousands of dollars in savings, and people do actually pay retail. But back to the hardware real quick, mandatory. You need a box. You need some kind of a computer to work on. Do you have to have a Mac? Can you work on a PC?
I'm one of those weird people who have both. I have a Mac laptop, MacBook Pro. It's my third MacBook Pro. It's cute. It's sexy. It runs great. I love it. But
when we were in Nashville, I'm pretty confident you said you were going to hurl it into the wall and you were never buying a Mac again, right?
I wanted to break it over my knee. Yeah. Anybody, I've been messing with computers forever. I've had Macs, PCs and other, and I know computers really well. Yes, there are some intrinsic things that are better with one operating system versus another. But all in all,
but you can work with either.
Neither one on an operating system general thing is better than the other. My Mac crashes just as often as my PC. The thing with the PC is, though, it's easier to junk it up. So don't.
Don't. Hey, what about this? Do you have any tips on the cheapest way to get a good enough audio machine? Because you can't just go and buy any PC. You have certain, specs that you have to reach and for everything to play nicely. But anyway, do you have any advice on the best way to get into a computer that you can run a DAW on well?
Well, the cheapest way to do it is going to be either, if you want to go in the Mac world, go get an older one. You can find, they're lovingly called the cheese graters, the old desktops. You can find those for pretty damn cheap. And those
the big old silver Mac Pros for anybody who doesn't know cheese grater.
Yeah. Yes. When you look at the front, it kind of resembles a cheese grater. They're sexy beasts, but it does kind of resemble a cheese grater. You can get one of those on eBay and other places for a startlingly low amount. Yes, they're big. Yes, if you look at the stats, it's not going to sound as sexy as that Dell you can get for cheap. But that's one of the apples to oranges that people compare that don't make sense. To make the shortcuts to get that $300, $400 Dell, the things they cheap out on to make that possible, screw up audio computers. Don't buy a $300 Dell. Don't buy a cheap computer like that. Buy an older one or build it yourself. And if anyone wants, some advice on that, I'm a geek, email me, whatever. I'll happily, I get called out more often on being someone's tech helper than my production expertise. Drake on a different podcast sourced me as his IT guy. Drake Donovan, and talking to him on voiceover, he had his Alienware die, and it was old enough that it wasn't a surprise. And I basically buy this motherboard, buy this and buy that. And instead of buying a new computer, he bought three pieces to replace and ended up with a way faster computer that worked way better for him. It's better to build your own or get something high quality used than it is to buy that cheap Hewlett Packard or Dell or whatever.
And if we are going to be entering the production industry, we're not interested in being a voiceover artist. We're just, going to produce audio, a computer and your software. And again, I'm trying to think, any DAW that someone's going to buy, they might get into Ableton Live. They might get into Reaper, of course.
Yep.
They're all going to come with enough plugins to get you going, though, is my point.
Oh, yeah.
You don't have to buy any separate plugins to get to produce. I'm talking to produce imaging that could be heard in Detroit or Dallas or LA or New York. You can get it done on the stock Pro Tools and a computer, and that's it.
You can. You absolutely can. And that's where art art versus science. That's where the rich kid who has all the toys and doesn't know how to use any of them versus the scrappy poor kid, you know, who refines and takes every ounce of power out of what they have. Now, I'm not going to lie to you. If you have someone who's good and knows what they're doing and has more toys than you, they're gonna win. They're gonna sound better. But you know, you can get on these mailing lists. You know, put together a smart computer and build your way up. You know, you do not have to buy a $2,000 Apollo audio interface to sound good. You can buy a $150 or $200 Focusrite USB one and be fine. Now, the Apollo is going to sound better, but if you don't know what you're doing, someone with that Focusrite can kick your ass.
I still the Focusrite is a great piece of hardware to mention. If you want, you know, you're gonna want an external audio and a balanced audio interface would be the term. But people talk about the preamps often, and the Focusrite preamps are some of the best, especially in their price range.
For their price range, they're pretty much impossible to beat. There are some boutique name brands that we could go on all day about that I could name drop. And if anyone's interested, just email me. I can give you some alternatives. Yeah. But you can get into a Focusrite. If you're going to say something about a brand that you're looking at, I have, you know, this much money to spend and it ain't that tall, you're better off making sure you have something, you know, the best Focusrite you can get or that you need. You're going to do really good with that. You're going to be okay with that.
They have the little single channel. I don't know. Is it a Scarlett, the red one? I was actually thinking of getting it for a new Rode device. Anyway, the preamp in that I was reading is exactly the same as the stuff in their more expensive models, but that's $100. You know, that's a great audio interface to get started with for $100.
The entire Scarlett line uses the same preamps. Now, if you buy their $599, you know, whole bunch of channel and ADAT, you can add even more channels version.
Yeah.
You get more of those preamps if you're going to record a band. Or you have multiple mics and you're doing a podcast, or you have band talking. The Focusrite stuff, it's rock solid. It just is. Now, if you get their higher series, there is some better guts in that. But again, for doing what we're doing, where it's compressed over a stream or over the FM band, if you practice your craft, you know, you're better off if you have outside of your computer X number of dollars to spend, you're better off in spending a little extra on the microphone or a little extra in buying a plug-in and getting a solid Focusrite rather than going berserk bananas and buying more than you need in the sound card.
Yeah. And again, assuming for at least for now, today, we're talking to people that are just looking to get into audio production or imaging production, plug-in wise. So they've got their DAW, but now they want to stretch their legs. You already brought up sound toys. I'm going to go ahead and say that as my answer because I'm going to assume the DAW you came with a good enough compressor and EQ and a nice reverb and a delay. But anyway, where do you think they should put their next piece of money when they want to get into to more software toys?
Well, and here's where I'll disagree with you, not just to be problematic, but I would
do it.
The first plug-in, if someone was going to buy just a plug-in, I love Isotope, and I would say Ozone, Ozone first, no matter what, because it's a good mastering plug-in. You can also use it on your voice channel. It does have some basic reverb in it. It has EQ that's really good. It is a great tool set. And when I made that bet, I bought the UAD-1 and I bought Ozone. And I did a lot of research and I was really, really damn lucky because, man, I've bought every version of Ozone since then. And I am a gigantic fanboy
of Isotope. I own every single plugin they make except for their synthesizer. And to be honest, I can't answer why I haven't bought that. I can't. I want it. I just haven't bought it. But Ozone all day long, because you can master your audio with it and use it on your voice channel and bring your voice guy out and make him stand out. Or if it's you, make you stand out. Where SoundToys, I adore, but those kind of echoes and such, for the dollar amount, even on sale, you have to pay a lot more for something you're going to use a lot less. Than the mastering bus and the voiceover bus.
For sure. Cool. That's a good one. Although you disagreed with me. So you're a dick.
You got two different views. Both Ryan and I are fanboys of Sound Toys. That ain't kicking them. Echo Boy is one of my favorite little toys.
I wanted to get your take on this, or maybe how people can think in terms of this. Okay, you could buy 1,000 different EQs if you wanted to right now. And generally speaking, some of them look differently. They have sliders instead of knobs, or some of them have different words in parallel and this and that. But what really is the difference in all of these EQs or compressors, or, you know, why are there thousands of every type of plugin?
The answer can be as confusing as the question you're asking. With EQs and compressors, they all do something a little differently, or they wouldn't exist. With a giant asterisk, when someone is emulating vintage gear, there's going to be multiple versions of those kind of things. You know, you'll find the world is lousy with LA-2As and 1176 reproductions.
Who doesn't have? That's a compressor.
Yeah.
And who doesn't have their version of those? Yeah, you see them everywhere.
And there's a lot of ways to go at that. And part of the reason for all those different versions of those things is because when people are recording bands, and those old tube style compressors, they actually change the sound, period. Even if you're not tweaking the knobs, even if you just turn it on and you don't have it doing any compression at all, it's coloring the noise. It's adding the tube effect that, you know, the analog at the time did. So that's the older, where they have some sort of code number or name, and, you know, based on so-and-so's rack unit or this company's unit. That's what those are. And just know that what they're doing is they're trying to emulate something that is beloved for one reason or another. And it's beloved for a reason, but that reason may not be useful to you. You know, if you're a voiceover person, you may sound great on an 1176 or an LA-2A or a Manly Vox box or what have you. But then there's the other classification where they're in more in the digital realm, and they may have some analog optional coloring, but they're doing things that analog could never do. I don't know how they pronounce it. Sound Radius has the Power or Power and something like that. Their new one that is pretty cool. And there's several like that are doing it dynamically. Neutron is mastering suite by Isotope, again, designed for the music world mainly. You can get really complicated with this shit. The bottom line is you want, as far as a compressor is concerned, multi-channel compression. So you can treat the low end differently than the high end, so you can bring out the best part in a voice or a piece of production or the song in the background. As far as EQs, same thing. There's the vintage shit and there's the modern shit.
you know, you can go with the Surfer EQ by Sound Radix, which is dynamic, which will actually move the EQ following the zone of audio that you've picked, which is really cool. Or you can go old style where it just looks like, you know, grandpa's old silver face thing with a whole bunch of sliders.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's more my speed. I like EQs like that. They make sense to me.
Yeah. You know, and that, what you said is exactly it. What makes sense to you? Start with that. And then from there, play with the demos of the other ones.
That's key. Any software company that's worth anything will allow you to try it out. And so go and try stuff.
Yeah. But, I'm going to say this for probably like the sixth time. Sign up for their email lists. McDSP has sales. A lot of these big companies with these big expensive things will have these flash sales where you can buy a $500 program, a plug-in for, you know, $59 or $29. Mm-hmm. They want you to get into their ecosystem and to buy more stuff. So get on those lists.
Since I think we're into our fifth hour now,
us production people live in a box, man. You get us talking. Sometimes you won't shut up.
Well, actually, I have a few, VO friends that are, 100% VO. They're in their home studio 24/7. And when I hang out with them sometimes, they're so excited to be in public with humans. Like they've just been let free from prison and you can tell. And sometimes I just feel nice, like giving them a human being to speak to.
Yeah.
So it happens on all sides of the wall, all sides of the glass, if you will.
Absolutely.
So I'm going to make myself a note to ask you for the Terry Phillips list of audio companies that we need to sign up for all their mailing lists and get all their discounts. So I'm gonna have that. That's gonna be a bonus that I'll wait to post this until we have that from you. And I know that it'll take you 5 minutes, just but we'll give people a good idea. You know, and this is for more of the amateur-ish.
Yeah.
You know, newbie, if you will.
Well, no, Alien Imaging, Jeff over there, this is a while back, he showed a picture of his studio and he had something running on his iPad and I shot him a message. You go, dude, what the fuck is that? That looks cool. And he goes, oh, it's this, man, you know, a little synthesizer. Da, 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 da. I ran out and immediately bought it. So I don't think it's just, I want to know what other people are finding cool too, because toys.
Yeah, 100%. I do have quite a bit of Isotope. I will echo you on that. Sample Logic. I've gotten into some Sample Logic quite a bit, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm getting a little more into the music side, I'd say. I like to tinker on that end, so I'm trying to get my hands on a lot more types of instruments. But anyway, your email, they can use terry@terryphillips.com, right?
Yep.
Cool, because you said they can email you, so hopefully people will. And I will say, Terry is actually really good at just simply, like, if you have a question, why is this happening? Or, what does this sound like to you? What am I missing here? All that. You know, he's not going to sugarcoat and he's not going to bullcrap you. And he is going to give you well thought out responses.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Yeah.
It's nice to have people.
And I'm not a condescending prick either. I remember cobbling together the things from having zero to no budget. So if that's your world, I feel for you. I've been there. I've also been in the I work for a big company and they won't let me buy things budget. I work for Mel Karmazan.
You made me lose my train of thought. Once we get our keyboards fully functional, I don't know, this is a teaser.
Yes.
I'm assuming you're going to write a blog about it. If you don't hurry up though, because I'm very excited. So you got me into basically Terry has gotten me into making our own programmable, customizable, shortcut mechanical keyboards.
Yes.
Really, you can do it for any DAW, but we made ours for Pro Tools. Mm-hmm. It's an addiction. So you got me into it and you said you were going to write up a real nice blog post about it.
Yeah.
I don't want to take away your thunder, but I do want to write something up about it.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. No, you know. And I'll send along a studio shot because I'm sickly proud of my monstrosity the desk I built. So seeing other people's studios. So if I don't share mine, then you know
it's not fair. Then exactly. You know you're asking for the pics and not sharing the pics.
Okay. Right.
Yeah. So it's I'll just say this. I've seen pictures. I love what you've done with the place, but it's steampunkish.
Yeah.
Can I say that? Yeah. Steampunkish.
Yeah.
It's really cool. Really cool. All right, great. So on the podcast page, there will be pictures of the nice new studio, something about the keyboards, and then the list of all the companies Terry recommends you get your name onto.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely. And any other stupid crap I think of as well.
I have my final question. I think, you know, because you were on this podcast a long time ago already for a different stuff, but I think you answered it. But also you've probably answered it now, maybe in like, you know, 20 seconds, just this, the top thing that if people are looking to get into the industry that they should focus on right now.
Well, if you're looking to get into radio, the number one thing is be available to move. It sounds stupid, but I can't tell you how many people from the local broadcast college or a university who think they're going to get out and they're going to work in Detroit. It's like, you might need to move around there a little bit, Bubba. I sure the hell did. I did not think after a couple years here, a couple years there, that I would end up, you know, 18 and a half years in Detroit, Michigan. That was not my original plan. And man, you know, cool town, and seeing this town come back, you know, like a fighter and just refusing to die is just awesome. And do not be afraid to reach out and ask. Don't.
Yeah.
When I was starting out, you know, I passed things back and forth between Dave Fox and several other people. Just some amazing talent. The guy who founded Brown Bag. He and I have had so many long conversations on the phone. I can't even count. You've already mentioned, you know, a couple other people, you know, not so much Jeff Berlin. I've actually never talked to him, which I don't know why not. That's just dumb.
You guys would be some sort of a weird vortex of tech. The universe might collapse upon itself if you actually connected. It's possible.
Well, me and Mr. Sound Design of Phoenix are similarly differently geeky as well. Yeah, Rick Allen. And the same thing for Jeff Schmidt. You know, similarly but differently geeky. None of us, man. This is our passion too, and welcome. Join us. Call. It doesn't have to be me. It can be one of them.
You give their information out, Terry.
No, no. But if you reach out to them on social media, they're all very cool guys. They absolutely are. And last but absolutely not least. Don't let anyone tell you you can't do it. I'm a dyslexic kid who was told by a professor I would never make it in radio. A professor at Texas A&M told me I would never make it in radio because I'm dyslexic. And the reason I'd never make it in radio because I wouldn't be able to do production because I couldn't do a first dry read and nail it as a freshman in college. And you know what? I love that man to death, but he was fucking wrong. So
nice.
I could bore you all day with people who said, you know, I wouldn't get where I am, however good or not good that is. But don't let someone say you can't do something. If you want it bad enough, you will surpass the person with natural talent. You will. Yeah. Because you want it more than they do.
Right on, man. All right. Well, I'm glad we finally got to do the long form interview. It's been a long time coming. Reach out to Terry, his website, terryphillips.com. He's on the Facebook, /Terry Phillips, Twitter at FM Prod Guy, Instagram, FM Prod Guy.
Yep.
Look him up. He's on all of the socials. He's posting pictures constantly on every social network, everywhere, all the time.
And so, I hardly ever get to play, but you can find me on Xbox Live and PlayStation Network on FM Prod Guy too.
Oh God! And then, you know what? That it's possible. It's possible. That's the first video game usernames I've had put out on this podcast. So that's cool. Good for you. You will not find Ryan on any video game system because I stopped playing video games after Blades of Steel.
I'm a grown up child, man. I love Fortnite right now and PUBG.
Great. I don't know what that are those words. I don't even know what that is. I'm actually not kidding.
The immature and the young know exactly what the hell I'm talking about.
Gosh. Wow.
I being
okay,
immature.
Good. I'm glad. Cool. All right. Terry, thanks a lot, man. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah. Oh God, my pleasure. Thank you.
Contact the show, contribute your opinions, see additional content, or simply stay connected at producerspodcast.com.